Let's turn to Scott Monkey with Durham Growers. Scott, you ready to go?
Can you hear me?
You sure can. See you too.
All righty. Sounds good. I guess I'd like to thank, you know, you, Senator Hovind, and all the guys that worked on all this stuff. I mean, it's been a great help to the producers out here, especially I'm out in Western North Dakota getting blown away today, but it's been great, a great financial help to all of us. I guess I've got two questions if that's good. On the COVID deal where you referenced $20 an acre and you said row crops, is that for just row crops or how does it affect the small grains?
Yeah, that's a really good question. We've got both price trigger crops and the flat rate crops. I think it's going to come out to $20 an acre, but that's one that, you know, I'm going to defer back to Stephen. So you can take that. Do you want to learn about both questions and then we'll give Stephen and Brad to answer?
Sure. Yep. My other question is, you know, you're on the QLA, you're talking about, you know, I've got, you know, everybody that sold out to Durham, you know, we had very poor quality Durham. It's marked feed. I believe I'm getting $2.50 a bushel for it, you know, 67 falling numbers. Now I know milling price when I was selling that stuff was probably $5, $5.25. But how do you, who's going to be in charge of proving that, me or the county? Because I mean, my assembly sheets, my tickets don't reference that kind of price, but you know, cause it's marked feed and that's what you get. So I just, my other question was, you know, who figures that out? And am I responsible for coming up with that, you know, if it would have been good grain price?
Yeah, both good questions. Stephen, you want to start out on that?
Certainly. Excellent questions, Senator. Yeah, absolutely correct. Starting with a $20 flat rate payment, that is for price trigger crops, which did include small grains, as well as corn, soybeans, et cetera. And then, as the Senator indicated, it includes those flat rate crops that we really didn't have enough information to show that they had a 5% decline in price. And so it's going to throw in all the other commodities. So it's really going to be pretty inclusive with regard to what's eligible. You know, we're not looking for producers having to apply because this really is a top up of their, what they applied for under CFAP 2. You remember CFAP 2 had the price trigger crops and then the flat rate crops. And ultimately we're going to use that information. Producers won't even have to come back in the office is what our hope is. Right now, that's what we're trying to get at, because we're going to use it based on the acreage that you've already certified under CFAP 2. So that's kind of question number one. So it does include your small grains. And then when you get to Durham, that's an excellent question in the sense that my first question back to you would be, where you ended up marketed as feed grain, was it the same mill that actually did the falling numbers and certified to the price, the difference have the board price or the price difference? Or did you end up having to take it somewhere else to market as feed grain so you don't have that matchup with regard to price?
No, I marketed it in the same place. I mean, it's just, I mean, if it would have been good grain, you would have got milling. If it was poor grain, so you got feed. I mean, I was at the same elevator though.
So I would say you probably could work with the elevator to try to identify the date with regard to of the, you know, the milling price versus the feed wheat price. That would be, to me, that would be my recommendation because that helps you. If you have that data to show that price decline based on what the milling price was versus the feed wheat price was, then ultimately that's what we're going to be looking for to pay your quality loss on that 70% on. If you would happen to not have that information, then it's going to be left up to the county committee to work through what those adjustments are associated to that loss in value, that price loss in value.
So I'm better off doing a little footwork on my own, you're saying?
I would say for the benefit of you, because I think you're gonna fare out much better if you're able to provide that price or get something from a third party, indicate what that discount was, that total discount was from the milling price versus the Durham price to qualify. Because if you don't have that value price, as I've indicated before, then it's going to go to the county committee to establish a value based on other producers in the county that may have gotten the information or have the information. But we're going to apply an additional 50% factor, which you really don't want to see happen on your payment.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Yeah. That Brad, did you want to add to that?
The only thing I'm going to say is that I think Steve alluded to the fact that these county committees are a very, very important tool in our counties. And I think when we get into these documentations that are going to be variants of different kinds, I mean, you know, the purpose of the county committee is to make sure that we don't have any fraud going on and that we get acceptable forms documentation. So producers, when you do that in mind, you know, we want to help you, but we don't want to invite a little bit of overindulgence in the program either. So, I mean, that's what the purpose of the county committee is. So keep that in mind when you're applying.
Right, but I kind of get the sense that, as Scott said, a little legwork might be in order, because if you can go back on the date you sold and get from the elevator the price of, feed quality versus milling quality, and they give you those two prices, it seems to me it's well worth your time and effort to do that, because now you're looking at 70% of that quality loss adjustment rather than half of that 35%, depending on what your county establishes. So it seems to me like that would be the thing to do, wouldn't it, Stephen and Brad?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, it's going to take some work. And the good part that, every county is going to be a little bit different as far as how the rains affected it. So those county committee members will know, what factors would be affected.
And we went through a lot of calculations on the price trigger and the flat rate and all that. And of the stuff that we looked at, and that's why, as Stephen said, we put actually some of that in the statute directing them, because we actually felt that making sure that we had that $20 an acre was important and something that could be easily delivered. So we hope it works well. We think it works well. Our calculations are that just that's going to be $60 million plus for North Dakota, not counting the other things that we're talking about for livestock or any of those things. We did some work with them on it, and we appreciate their work. Hopefully that'll work out. We'll see what you guys think as you get into it deeper. Let's see. Let's go to Clark Coleman with Sunflowers. Right now, he might be delayed. Are you on with us?
Yes, Clark? I am.
Okay,
yes,
go ahead. Go ahead.
We were supposed to fly out of Bismarck this morning, and the winds wouldn't allow them to de-ice the airplane. It's kind of crazy. And I'm still in the airport, but I'm glad I'm able to join in on the meeting. I also want to thank you, Senator Hovind, for all the great work you guys have done out there, USDA, FSA. Without the hard work that you guys have done, it would be really tough for local farmers and ranchers to be able to make ends meet the last few years. So we deeply appreciate that. Is everyone hearing me okay?
Yeah, sure can. Thanks, Clark. Appreciate it.
So my question, with the quality loss, there's a couple commodities in my own situation where I had contracts in place, like with chickpeas and some confection sunflowers, where I had a real good contract put in place, and then we had that weather event and we got them harvested, but the quality was really poor. These contracts were, I couldn't deliver them. They were rejected. And so I ended up selling these, just on the food market at like a local elevator or whatever, just for livestock feed. So there's going to be a big discrepancy because I sold them as feed and that was the market price at that time, but they were actually sold, with a pretty good contract price. And so my concern is, if I can't verify that on the same elevator, same ticket type of deal, how's that going to be addressed?
Stephen?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't think that it has to be just the same elevator, as long as you have a third party that's verifying what that price would have been versus what you actually received. I don't want to go too deep in the weeds on this, but that seems logical that we would be using it. So it doesn't have to be from the same elevator. It can be different forms of market, as long as you've got a third party that's verifying that information. So I'll work with Brad and his team to make certain that we address that, because I've not talked about that specifically with staff. I'm sure our team here in USDA FSA has already identified some of those concerns, because we provided training early December for our staff. And so hopefully some of those questions have already resonated up from Brad and his team there in North Dakota with regard to those concerns. So that's where I'm going to stop on that one, rather than get myself too far out over my skis.
Thank you very much. I got one more quick question. Let's say, for example, you had some corn that had real light test weight, real high moisture. You put it in the bin, you sat on it. And in my own situation here, I planted corn this year with the intention of blending it to try to get the test weight up so I wouldn't have to take those discounts. I've marketed over 100,000 bushels of lightweight corn last year with this year's corn, got it up to that 51, 52 pound test weight where I don't have the discounts now. Whereas if I would have sold that corn, and it's documented for insurance purposes that I had X amount of bushels in the bin, it had this terrible test weight. Is there going to be any provisions for making up for that somehow?
So I just want to make certain I understand the scenario. You had 2000, let's say it was 2018 crop that you left in the bin from one year to the next. You did not have a grading factor. You didn't take it to the mill for a grading factor. Just sat in the bin, ultimately had low test weight, high moisture. You were hoping to carry it over from one year to the next to then blend it with your 19 crop. By doing that, you then raise the market price that you didn't have a discount. Unfortunately, that's not something we're really going to be able to take advantage of because we're looking for that evidence, you know, specific evidence to show what those discount factors were for that crop year. And so since you've blended both years together to then result in not having any discounts, ultimately that's not going to qualify under the QLA program.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of a shame. I know a lot of people that, you know, how can I salvage some of this corn crop? You know, quite honestly, it was our situation. It was actually 2019's crop that we couldn't get harvested. We harvested it in March of this year. So it was in the bin this March, and then we combined 20's crop in October, and that's what we're blending together. When we were combining that crop in March, it was $2.70 corn. Everyone said, well, we can't sell it at this price. We just, you know, it's too much of a loss. So that's, you know, fortunately, it's worked out for us. We've been able to blend this year's with last year's, and the corn market price has come back. But there was definitely a loss there, and, you know, you figure the interest paid on maybe a loan you owed or an operating loan to sit on that an extra year because of the event, harvesting the snow or whatever. So it's a question that's going to come up. I know several guys that are going to be saying, hey, you know, just because we were able to manage and try to salvage this, we're kind of getting penalized.
Excellent comments. Definitely writing them down. So we'll definitely take them into consideration moving forward. But again, with the program's design and how it's outlined, with you mitigating your damage as a result of blending it, and now it doesn't have discounts as a result of you blending it and making it marketable without a price decline, I don't know that there's anything we're going to be able to do. But I'm taking it down, and I'll work with the team on it to see whether there's any provisions that we could come up with.
Sure. I sure appreciate it taking the time to listen to me. And once again, if the airport calls for my flight here, I'm going to have to check out. But very interesting. Thanks again, you guys. You do a great job.
Thanks, Clark. Let's go to Kevin Wolski with Pulse Scores.
Hey, Senator. And what a good group of looking guys, huh?
Who shot all those deer?
I know. I have to do that so you can focus, right? You got to. That's my trophy room. So otherwise you would never notice a pea farmer.
Well, just so you don't raise them in a, you know, fenced in area there. Otherwise, you know, it's pretty impressive otherwise.
So I'm kind of, you know, one of the Northern Pulse growers. That's who I'm speaking with, the association. It's sometimes the little pea guy, right? The princess and the pea. We always get forgotten. It's just pulse growers. So I'm really glad that you, have done the work with, our group. It's been phenomenal. So I guess that's the first thing I would say is thanks for all your work. The questions, we really were more just happy that our quality problems are more about labs and branches with pulses. You know, we just don't have access. I would say if anyone grows pulses knows that we've kind of asked for some more support. This is a little off the topic. It's more about we need increased. We've tried to establish a few labs, one in Fargo, North Dakota, one in Michigan, one in Washington. I guess that would be, you know, maybe one of the things that like Stephen was saying about all the quality things. To get true pea quality, right, you have to go to you know, sometimes farmers just don't have, it's not quite as easy to get as it is, you know, some of the other crops. So I would just say that working with, you know, the Pulse Quality Network system that we have, and getting more and better labs so that we can do some of those tests, is probably more of a statement than a request. otherwise, no, you know, listen, you've helped the pulse industry and all the pulses, and, you know, we look forward to all the things. I'm not going to take up everyone's time.
Stephen, any thoughts there, Brad? Okay. Go ahead. Thanks, Kevin. Appreciate it. Burton Flieger, with the Lamb and Wool Crew. Burton?
Thank you, Senator. I'm not sure that much of this was going to apply to the livestock industry. Am I correct on that?
Well, what will is the top-up payment under the COVID package. Like you say, we got a top-up payment in there for livestock, and we made sure that we included lamb. So that would apply, and maybe Stephen and Brad have some more information for you on that. Or maybe you have a question on it.
The top-up payment would just be in addition to the ones that we've already received for the COVID relief?
Yeah. Yeah. And Stephen, do you have more on that?
I do, Senator. You know, the provisions really are tied to, the top-up payment really is tied to cattle. Now, we are going back and we're looking at the, because lambs fell under a sales commodity. And so we looked at the revenue that it was produced in 2019. And then we paid on that gradation factor. If you all remember, it was, you know, a certain amount. I can't remember the percentages off the top. I know it was 10% or lower based on, you know, the first 100,000, 100,000 to 500,000 or 250. But that does not apply. The top of the center is referencing under the consolidated approach for 2021 is really specific to cattle. Now, we are looking at revisiting the sales commodities to determine whether or not we've captured everything for that 2019 marketing period. So, again, top-up doesn't necessarily apply to lambs, does for cattle. The contract grower piece does cover both swine and poultry. So they fall into that category with regard to paying contract growers. But lamb specifically, unless there's a modification to that 2019 sales number, there really isn't significant changes coming out associated with it, unless it falls into one of those other May categories of processor or things along those lines.
Well, I thought we worked to make sure we included, Rooster Guard, help me out. We were working to make sure we included the lamb and wool guys. So what do you have to add on that?
Actually, boss, I would probably defer to Aaron on it.
Aaron, are you on here? Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, I'm here, Senator. I'm looking through the statute to verify everything. So I'll follow up with Burton offline and get him an answer to make sure we have.
Yeah. Well, Burton, we specifically, you know, because we've talked before, we tried to make sure that we had something that would apply for lamb and wool as well.
Thank you, Senator. The disaster program here for Burley County is still pending through their local FSA as well. I believe that's going to wrap up here at the end of the month, is it not?
Burton, you're talking about the LFP?
Yes.
We're processing them as fast as we can. There got to be quite a few. The trouble is we only had 1 month that we can pay on, so the dollar amount isn't a very big amount. And
it was only 1 month. Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
I had submitted it, and they had asked to break it down based on mature ewes, lambs, rams, and such, and I had put it in, but I hadn't heard anything back. So.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you, Senator, for what you do, and I'll look forward to my correspondence with Aaron.
Yeah, we'll follow. Absolutely, Burton. We'll follow up with you. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.